This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, February 11th, 2010.
Thank you. It's right. Yeah, thank you. Hold. Yeah, we congratulate you on your decision, and if there are any questions, comments from anyone? All right, thanks for coming. Okay, without further ado, we'll skip a few of the announcements we have and jump to Dean Peter Lepage from the Arts and Sciences, who will talk about the budget cuts and everything else. Thank you for coming, brother.
One of the questions that is being asked in the sort of world of communication around what happened with theater, film, and dance, and is happening to them, is why is Cornell targeting the arts? And that one is one that I find actually particularly painful because the college and I personally very proud of our arts programs and very conscious of their importance to the university. So why is Cornell targeting the arts? The answer is that the arts, that is what happened. And let me give you just very briefly what happened, what led to this. As you all know, last year, very suddenly, Cornell discovered that it had major funding issues. And every part of the university had to absorb very large cuts. We've already absorbed about $9 million budget cuts in our college, and we have quite a bit more to go over the next couple of years. In a circumstance like that, that's 7% of our budget, to the framework. In a circumstance like that, you need to start focusing your resources on your core activity, which in our case is our teaching and the sort of research scholarship and creative output of our faculty. So literally, what you do is you start going through the budget of the college and almost all of the budget of the colleges and departments. So you're going through the departments and our budget books, but this thick, and I've literally paged through it, page by page, several times in the last 6 months. And you look at every single department, and what you're looking for is departments with unusually large costs. And I've basically talked beyond the cost of the professorial faculty, who of course is the core of our teaching mission. that we identify a small number of departments that have unusually large costs, one of which happens to be an arts program. We're not looking for arts programs, we're looking for programs with unusually large costs. Music, which is another big arts program, in fact, I'm pointing to it, it's over there somewhere, is one that actually affects quite a few more students than the theater program. That wasn't one that was on this list. It does not. It affects a very, very efficient program. So it really is not about targeting the arts. It's about worrying about things that cost an unusual amount compared to other things. What I do to sample numbers, just to give you a sense, the cost of the theater department divided by the number of students taught, that number is about 2 to 3 times, depending on how you calculate it, 2 to 3 times higher than the average in college. One of the reasons, obviously, for the theater production and so on, the staff involved in that, the non-professorial staff divided by the number of professors, about 5 months the college average. They have much larger extra costs than other departments. Part of this, of course, is that theater is complicated to put on, and I actually, at the end of this process, it will still actually be an outlier, but they're an extreme outlier right now. And when you're in a very tight budget situation, you have to look at these extreme outliers. And indeed, we spent the last several months looking very, very closely at them. They're one of the smallest majors, it's actually 3 majors in the department. The one that's most costly is the theater production. The theater major is, I graduate about 7 people a year, so it's one of our smallest majors. The average size in the art college is 25 to 30. And some of our biggest majors are in the hundreds. A large part of the job has to do with the productions that actually I run. Last year at the University of Mass. Those have students, many students beyond just the theater majors, which is one of the beautiful features of this program, that everyone, any major, is all going to these productions if they're good enough to get in. There's about 100, 120 students who are on stage acting every year in the theater. Which is a good number, somewhere near the number of people put on stage in the music department, but still a significant number of students. But this department is very, very much an outlier in terms of cost, and so we really have to come and talk to them about their costs. The one thing I will say is at the end of this process, we're going to have a great theater. Department, a great department, and it will still be super. But I would be completely irresponsible. It's irresponsible with your money, right? It's your tuition. It's one of the teacher sources of my income. I'd be irresponsible with your money if I didn't actually have this discussion. So, let me answer some questions.
Sure. And before we move on to questions, let me just explain how the process will work for the audience members. I'm going to recognize a member of the audience. We have a large list here for every third speaker, so it'll be every two SA members will speak, and then I'll recognize one of you, and we'll limit questions and comments to 2 minutes. So, first up is Representative Desai.
A couple comments and then a question. Obviously you stated that this program is an outlier compared to something that was as hard as possible. President Gordon made a similar statement saying that the university would be cut funding on programs that benefited a small portion of the student body versus those that benefited the student body as a whole. So if you could comment on, you know, whether you think that this is something that's going to spread to other programs within the arts and sciences department, and then on top of that, looking through the arts and sciences task force before getting it, there's a couple of comments about maybe absolving some majors into other ones. Do you think that's a possibility that we might have in the future for anything specifically?
On the last question, I think I don't have anything to say to it yet. That's not something we really had time to look at yet, the sort of merging different majors. We have some specific discussions about very specific things, but it's way too early. But for Freedom of the Open, and the effect was too small by a number of people, so it's not a great issue of mine. On the other issue, the first question is just the tip of the iceberg, or the inevitable wedge. I don't know where this budget crisis is going to go. I don't know where things are going in the future. We're trying very hard in the last 6 months. Last winter, I didn't have any idea where things were going to go. It was so hard. We were cutting in a way that wasn't at all strategic. We now have a pretty good idea of where the money is in the college and where we're heading. And we have a small number of programs. Only one of them is a performing arts program that we're talking to now about significant budget cuts, rearrangements, redoing, but no closing of anything, actually. I'm not closing theater. I'm not closing anything. It's a matter of making things more efficient. The art college always defends the notion that we should keep things even if only a few people are interested in them. I don't have a problem with a theater major, say, that only has 7 students in it. An arts and sciences program, a liberal arts program, our program has to have theater in it. It has to be available. And the benefits of having that program extend beyond the major. And so I'm not out to sort of shrink everything into anything small or aggressive. We actually, a key part of the liberal arts plan is the diversity, the intellectual diversity, which means we'll have to get into the field of only small number of people.
All right. Representative Brack.
Hi, Dean O'Hosh, and thank you so much for coming again. I just have a few quick questions. You mentioned that you're not going to be closing the theater department and film and dance, but could you just touch on why $2 million of the $6 million, so a third of the budget, is being cut from this particular department,
yeah,
and just how that isn't going to cripple a lot of what's happening right now?
I'm serious. $2 million out of the $6 million budget of the department.
Right. How did you choose this for $2 million? I realize that you choose it because of the green outline, but why $2 million?
I haven't corrected the thing. What I actually asked for was a cut between $1 and $2 million, which is a huge range. I also told them they didn't have to deliver it for 2 years, which means I'm going to be in serious debt for 2 years while I'm waiting for them to deliver it because I want something well designed. Where in the range between 1 and 2 million is going to fall? What will determine it? What will determine it is how good an idea they have. If they come in and they really excite me about their plan for restructuring, then it will only be a million. If they come in and it's less exciting, we'll balance it against other needs and they'll get a bigger cut. What I'm looking for, what will excite me, is the impact of the program on students. That, in fact, is my primary consideration. How many students, what kind of experience are they getting? You asked, how can I beat this whole cripple zone? Well, for one thing, there are many ways to do a theater program in universities, many models. The model we adopted it maybe 20 years ago, is the most expensive model. It has all sorts of pros in terms of production quality and experience for the people in it. It also has some cons in that it's extremely expensive. It's also a level of professionalization that keeps students out of lead roles, that keeps them out of a lot of different theater activities. So a lot of programs actually do things very differently. It's a much more student-centric approach, but also much, much lower cost. I don't know, and that was our model when I came here in 1980, the sort of costs that I'm talking about, the numbers I'm talking about, roughly tripled since in the last quarter century. And so I don't know what the right model is. I have no idea. I know that guys like David Felsen, the artistic director and a brilliant director of acting coach and teachers, I need their creativity to tell me. I'm going to have a discussion. But I know that there are other models that cost a lot less and still have to be impactful students.
I just know that the degree of professionalism that's held in this department is the reason why many students come to our college. So I think by cutting that budget $1 to $2 million is going to severely impact the level of professional ability that you're going to get from the students that want to come here and that are going to stay here. So I just want you to take that into account.
It is a big budget. I'm absolutely aware of that tension. There's another side of the story. People sometimes criticize a program like ours because it does not actually give students the kind of experience they're going to encounter in professional theater, which is much, much less well endowed than what we have. And I'm telling you what I hear from theater experts at the end now and elsewhere, and there's actually a debate about what is the best model. I am not an expert. I have no idea what the best model is. I know with $2 million cut, they will still, even if they're higher in terms of our cost, they will still have a lot of resources. And I think we can do something really impressive with this. It'll be different from what we're doing now. I absolutely concede that. But I actually have a lot of confidence in the theater faculty that will actually come up with something smart. But in 3 or 4 months, they will have proposals, and that's the time when we should discuss this, weighing the pros and cons. Right now, they haven't had any chance to plan, zero. And I mean, they're restarted. And in a way, we shouldn't be having this discussion now because it's way premature. Indeed, I would not have released it if I had been in the department. I would have waited until I understood my budget better, understood the options. But, you know, that's where I don't mind discussing it. But the real discussion comes in several months when we actually have some proposals from them where we're weighing this option versus that option. And I promise you that, this will be a discussion that will involve, you know, all of us. And it should be a very exciting discussion.
Yeah, before I take a question from the audience, I just had a quick question for myself. So if this $1 to $2 million cut were enacted, what do you see or foresee as how this would affect the interdepartmental connectivity of the program in future years? I know you said 7 graduates per year might be considered like an outlier or a fringe department and might possibly be, you know, neglected for future. So how do you envision this, you know, fitting into the larger Cornell framework, I guess, of departments?
I'm sorry, you asked me. I guess I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
What are you worried about possibly happening?
I guess, you know, if after strategic planning, if this were to be completed and, you know, our deficit is averted, you know, and you know, things are back in the black, How would future allocations to the departments be made, or what importance would you place on the departments?
I place a high importance on the arts, because we're the major arts producer for Cornell. That's one of our main roles, and so we're very interested in supporting the arts. I will say that the budget challenges we have now, they're here for several years. It's not like we can wait until the end of the semester and suddenly everything will look better. The most optimistic scenario is one where it's very tight for several years. So we're talking about quite a few years ahead in the future. How does the theater play out once Cornell starts growing and developing again? What happens to theater? I think it depends totally on what the creativity of the department and how they excel themselves. Again, the arts are a big deal here. You know, if you look at the stipend at Cornell, I look at the new buildings in the arts quad. Your arts building was a new one. Your music building was a new one. Those were actually two of the earliest. Physical science is getting one now. It's the first one in 50 years in the physical sciences. The college in Cornell has invested a lot in the arts. Especially now, the building. The only buildings on the arts quad are the Art Museum and Art Architecture and Planning. It's clear that if Cornell really does care about the arts, and I guess I'm confident that that will continue.
Okay, we'll now recognize speakers from the audience, Kelly Durkin, Julie Kleiss-Mendez, and Rockwell Shaw. You have 2 minutes.
The arts are also critical for the university's ability to attract outstanding students. With increasing frequency, the most academically gifted prospective students have usually felt commitment to some aspect of the arts.
For the most part, these students do not aspire to become professional architects, but they seek a university that can integrate their academic pursuits with their artistic passions. They become not only music majors, art historians, but physicists and philosophers. Not only English and comparative literature majors, but economists and engineers. Their talent and imagination are visible in every corner of the university, adding a distinctive dimension to intellectual inquiry and enriching campus life with a breathtaking array of exhibits, performances, and creative endeavors. To compete successfully for these students in the future, Princeton needs to create a higher profile for the arts on campus and ensure that we have sufficient curricular offerings and artistic venues to accommodate the students' interests. This is a statement from the president of Princeton University.
Okay.
The dean has told us that it's up to the department of theater, film, and dance to decide how to maintain the quality of education in the student budget. The university is trying to cut the total budget by 4%, but it will be cutting the performing arts budget by 25% to 50%. Such a disproportionate cut is unjust. The same quality of education that we're experiencing right now is that our theater majors are not the theater. They're also majors in other departments. The people who interact with our buildings, their history majors, their archaeology, their engineering. The people who come into our buildings are not solely interested in pursuing theater, film, and dance academically. However, if we transition to a student-based model, you are going to need to produce the same level of production, more students involved. What does that mean? That means you're going to be pulling the students who are involved and care about theater more time doing things that the staff should be doing to staff their profession. So that involves training of students, time for students to run the show, time for students to act in the show, and prepare for the show. Now I know you may not all be familiar with theater, film, and dance, producing all that stuff. That takes time. In what space is there going to be a new model for students to pursue other academic interests? That's my question.
Okay.
Can I get the answer?
Yeah, please.
I can't answer the very last question because I have no idea what the new model actually is, and we won't know for several months. I just know that when I look at the other institutions, when I look at my own sideline experience, but something I pay attention to because I actually like theater a lot. I know that there's a lot of potential here for creative life, and I'm going to wait and see what they actually have. So I will say about Princeton and other places, one of the fun things you can get to do as teams is invite other Ivy League department scientists to come visit. They invite us to visit them once a year, this meeting. They were at Cornell a couple of years ago, and I decided that we would actually have dinner over in the Schwartz Center and invite David Felshew, who's the artistic director of the theater, of the Schwartz Center and the theater in particular, one of our great poets, Alice Holden, from our creative writing program, very famous creative writing program. You should go, by the way, when they have community writers here, poets and so on, their things are dynamite. Really good. You heard the guy talk to his mom. And I had Zach Durkin, who's a great pianist on the faculty of music department, come over and talk about the integration of arts and liberal arts programs. And I did that because I knew that what we do here is actually different from almost all the other Ivies. And I one of my great pleasures walking into the Schwartz Center was to have our team look at the building and say, what is this building? And I said, well, it's our theater building. He said, what's in here? And I said, well, my theater film and dance department. He looked at it and said, wow, we don't have anything like this. That session that night was amazing. In fact, if you want to, you can really recommend this for people to come talk to you about the relationship between the general education and the arts. It had a huge impact on the deans. The next morning, we were talking about all sorts of other things as our meeting continued. They kept quoting these three people working into their presentations. So we actually are very advanced in our treatment of
you know, I'm kind of intrigued when the Harvard Dean is looking a little bit left out at Cornell, given all the other things that Harvard has.
GPN.
Hello, Dean LaPage. Again, thank you very much for coming. And so, I guess to continue on this, you know, this idea that the theater department at Cornell is truly unique and amazing theater department. And so, I would like to ask if to try and maintain this level of exceptionalism at Cornell amongst, you know, within this economic climate, if since we do have a relatively limited discussion here, if you'd be willing to try and create some type of what CALS has, a Dean Advisory Council, that when you work through this process of analyzing the different frameworks for changing the theater departments and other departments at Cornell as well within your school, if you could create some type of advisory council with students on it that would truly be able to look into the different options and how they, and then have actual students presenting how it would affect them and how they would like to see their theater department evolve in the future. So would you consider creating some type of advisory council that would aid you in this process?
I actually have wondered about that. I didn't have one of my problems is I'm very averse to creating groups where I don't have a lot of work for them. I don't like to have people meet uselessly. In the Art College, we have students on the most important committees of the college, which is our Education Policy Committee, the Academic Integrity Committee. EPC right now is making all sorts of weighing in on all sorts of things about the structure of our curriculum and so on. And that I have no problem with. Fantastic, I have students there. The actual types of things I was bringing from the group you're imagining, I had a hard time imagining enough diet where I could actually do the real work. I'm much more inclined to try and solicit opinion around specific topics like theater at a time when it's actually time to discuss it, if you have some time to scope it out. I think it's important for a sort of widely broad discussion because, again, it's clear that theater is being subsidized by people who are not in theater. That's what it means to be an outlier. So you all are subsidizing these activities. And that is the sort of real reality we're in. And so you should actually demand of me that I pay attention to this and be careful about how your money is being spent, being sure that it actually is in fact optimized. So I think broad discussion is useful. In fact, it should be broader than just people in the theater program.
No, and that's why so I guess since again we're limited in time, but the CALS, the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, has just a general body of students and faculty made from all the different departments who would help advise the dean on what, you know, when the dean wants to affect something, how does that affect student life?
And
so I would urge, if it's possible, to try and create that type of committee with theater students, but also with students from history, and also with students from all the different schools with majors in the art school, to try and so that when these cuts are made, there seems to be more of a discussion on campus with students so that students aren't, you know, shocked and worried about the future of their program. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Lynn.
I just have two quick questions. Number one, you keep referring to the notion of this model and this is the best model for our program. But from the discussions that we've had, it seems like the implicit assumption that you're making right now that the current model that we have is sufficient to some extent, not the best model. Because obviously, I don't need to change. So what if at the end it's possible that you realize in a certain extent that this is, you know, the best model? And looking at Cornell that you are, you might need to change the word. How are you going to, again, sustain the quality of the program in general? And I think number two, you keep referring to students as, you know, the primary recipients of the type of program that we are. But one of the things that I realized is my involvement in the theater program in the past is that it's actually a great gateway for the rest of the community. And I think it's one of the very, very few programs on campus that is basically open the doors of collaboration. It creates a community. Not only can they watch the shows, they can participate in the shows. You talk about Romeo and Juliet, they just have a collaboration with the high school students. So I think it's not only representation on the school, but the integrators. How far will we get?
To your first question, what it is turns out to be the best model. Part of the definition of the best model is just to be the cost. And that's the balance against the cost of the other things you desperately want him to do, right? I really think we had a big debate about the Cornell Cinema, for example, about whether it was worthwhile thinking for bringing that back Cornell Cinema that we helped administer. And it's an important arts thing. But we have the same issues too. Trying to balance things and come up with the right balance. And so it can't be viewed in isolation. You can't say, is this the best thing? You have to think it's the best thing given the environment we have. And for me, a big part of it looks like long-term sustainability. I mean, financial sustainability, not just the other thing that we talk about all the time these days. Given that we're in tight budget situations for the future, I want to give something that's robust, that isn't sort of right at the edge of what we're going for. And show them they need a model that fits comfortably in a funding envelope, which is inevitably small going forward. On the community issue, again, I'm a member of the community too, and my kids acted on stage at Ithaca High. They were part of this culture that you're talking about. My kids also performed music ensembles. I've had three sons actually at Cornell. I'm a Cornell parent. They made me drive them all over the Northeast and then all over the side. Visiting every college. You probably did that with your parents too, right? The community connection is extremely important. The Cornell interact with the community. A theater program needs audiences. It's not going to be, you can't do theater unless you have an audience. So I think any model in the end will have to invite the community in. But I do go back to what my core mission is, which is the teaching and the research scholarship. And that's first thing. And stepping up once I get helping the community. It must be done. It's not that it's unimportant to involve the community and do it, but I think I have to keep that priority in mind because of what my job is, right? This is my job in the university. I'm not the community relations for the university. I'm the one of the principal teaching organs in the university, providing courses that are taken by an entire university. About half the teaching, by the way, is the students from other colleges. We really are, in some sense, sort of in service organization that we announced the service with all.
Okay, before we move on, I'd just like to, thank you for your time here, and if it's okay with you, we'll go for another 15 minutes or so of Q&A, and then, we'll conclude. Great, thank you. Isaac Tate. What? Can we do every other?
Dear student members and especially being engaged, with the recent news of the necessary budget for potential model of theater, we, the members of Cornell and Interactive, have become concerned about the potential model of communications in this position. Cornell and all majors need this theater to go in and dance, or we need to help them in that case. The art must not be protected, or that would put many students at risk. If we lose the art, we lose the mental escape and protect the fact of the art life. And with it, we may lose many students to rely on for success. In times of economic instability and a foundation of high stress, of which Cornell is in, students require elements of escape, whether it lies in healthy avenues such as theater, film, and dance, the arts, or an unhealthy method such as overcrowding and drugging. Now, if the theater, film, and dance program is fully installed, that will give many students with fewer options to learn the art of communication. Not only does the destination more than the family to escape the art of life in unhealthy manner, it will lead to a stress bill that would add to the already high death toll when I'm experiencing this year alone. This leads to our second thing, the crippling effect of the loss of the arts will cause on the students
these domains. It's been long reported that artistic individuals are more susceptible to stress, depression, mood to have. But just as well, having an outlet to express oneself allows for a cathartic release of these negative factors. In addition, students involved in art can be a protective buffer from future stress, being able to compartmentalize their emotions for later release of the actual things, to the enjoyment of audience members who return that activity and serve. If these students lose their protective factors, they will be exposed to the harsh stress of our university with no manner to effectively manage their stress and thrive. And once again, we are facing the love of our student body to other universities or to depression and trauma. As a group of us maintaining ourselves and knowing mental health, we ask that you ensure the survival of our community. We understand that budgets must be recalculated, but we look towards those budgets. Those budget plans that keep our theater, film, and dance program relatively intact. Some of them have been asked, signed, members of the Winter Finance Center.
Thank you.
My question is, A, have you taken this into account?
Yeah, you can feel free to just briefly address the concerns you raised. You can feel free to briefly address the concerns he made, or we can move on to the next speaker.
Oh, just,
yeah,
I,
go ahead.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, sure, if you'd like.
You know, if you take, we have 20,000 students at Cornell, very creative, talented group of students. We get the best atmosphere when you put them together with guys like David Phelps, or some of the younger people like Melanie Breyer. You take directors of that caliber, actors of the caliber of our students. You know, they could perform in the parking lot or the line of drink, and it would be worth going to see them, and highly, highly entertaining. We're going to do much better than that, much, much better than that. But as long as we have people like David Belchew in this, in the mix, inventing our future for us, as long as we have a fantastic student body, we're going to have a great future here. And I really want the majors to realize that one of our major concerns is that Louisvac's survival, this transition, this is something we pay very, very close attention to going forward.
Alexandra Bradley.
Yes, better, yeah.
First of all, we've been talking a lot about the theater department. But there are four departments involved in here, film and dance. Now, film and dance are two departments that have a lot of primary faculty in the entire department. A lot of these people, in their jobs, and we would not have professors in those departments because we don't have professors right now. We have senior lecturers, we have professional staff, faculty. All the people that teach us how to make copies, how to build a set, are not in your faculty. I know we all had our moms learn how to do high school, and that was really funny, but that's not something that we can do here. Yes, we could perform in parking lot and we would still think you're beautiful, but that's not the priority. If we want to keep up a competitive school, students come to this school because we have a competitive arts department. Having $2 million is something that is not $2 million of our dollars to go to the senior faculty area of the theater department. That leaves us with only $2.5 million for everything else, including professional staff. Theater Berlin is the reason I went to school. I'm not a major, I'm a minor. I was not going to the school. I was going to NYU. And I couldn't have done theater because they didn't do it for you. There's much for you to suffer. And I am not the only person here to take Cornell because they're in the department. Even with, you know, it is time now to talk about
we are going to have to work with. If we're being asked for $2 million for introductory guidance to be done, it's triple. If we're going to work with $1 million, $500,000, that's something we can work with. We're not asking to have those cuts. We're aware that your department has to say that we need to keep like this around and work. We do have everything to work with.
Yeah.
But this is a matter of coordination.
One second. If I can briefly reply, from what I understood, I think the extent of the cut will be dependent on the budget model that is proposed, right? So, yeah, okay, great. Representative Nicoletti.
I just to be clear, I expect more than one proposal. I've asked them to give us a couple of ideas, probably not many.
Okay, I think that was
going to
be my question. I also want to just comment on what these candidates were talking about earlier with the Advisory Council. Myself and D.C. Paul Asher serve on the Cal Student Advisory Council with Dean Henry, and you know, it's been a terrific experience. I think, you know, just in terms for a venue for students to really speak with their views about important issues in college, it's just absolutely essential, and I think that there's always things to talk about. Throughout the last semester, we talk a lot about reimagining issues, advising issues, class issues, and it's just a way for students to connect with their issues. So I'm glad that you're going to take into consideration the students. But actually, what I'm curious about is, you know, you said just all the costs of the computer, the mechanic partner, are alarmingly unproportionately high. So how did they get like that, and who is supposed to be watching these budgets, you know, unproportionately high?
Yeah, that's a good question, and what happened really was a decision a long time ago, not a long time ago, it's actually happened since I was here. The program is quite different when I was being here. But it was a decision to go from one much more modern model to a much, much more highly professional model. Actually, again, this one pretty at the time, I remember the discussion about it, and I also remember at the time thinking this isn't my problem, I'm going to enjoy it because I didn't realize that it was a long way later. So with a conscious decision to change, it's a decision that has stood for a couple of decades now, and the problem is that we're facing a budget crisis, the likes of which we haven't seen for many, many decades. And so we're just in different territory. It has to be reevaluated.
So just like follow, so
yeah.
If there was no budget crisis, then the budget that they currently have would be no big issue.
We certainly didn't move to do this to elect. The question of whether they had the right model is actually a live question and one that came up from time to time. Right now, I don't really have the luxury of mulling it over in abstract sense because we're getting absolutely clogged by this budget. And then you know what that is to try and make the impact, especially the impact on our teaching, as unnoticeable as possible. It will certainly be noticeable in the theater.
Okay.
It's not clear to me that the life should be worse.
Adam, let's move on. Zach Lipson.
Thank you for being here. It seems that there's a lot of focus around the question of staff and ratio of staff and administrative staff and lecturers. My background, I'm a senior college scholar and scientist, studying computer science and technical theater. I really came to Cornell because when I was in high school, I was looking at colleges and just that there aren't a lot of schools out there that have really strong programs in both areas and where you can be from. That's something that's really unique to Cornell, so one of the main reasons I came. And if these cuts were very much issues. But I think that there's some misunderstanding about these staff and who they are, because you think of bureaucrats and red tape and administrators. But the department, because of the way theater works, is primarily run by staff. The dance program has one professor and five lecturers. All the lighting, sound, costumes are entirely done by staff and lecturers. Many of these elements are all done by staff and lecturers.
investigating the design engineer. And I think that pretty much everyone in the department has been teachers in the only way, whether that's the job or not. So I guess my question is, how does the decision that professorial lines must be preserved amongst all outstanding routes? And going with that, how do you plan to both maintain teaching and research without by reducing the number of the staff who lack teachers, and having plans to attract and retain faculty, my favorite culture, who presumably came because of this program and wouldn't want to be someplace that doesn't have?
VP Kumar.
So I just want to, first of all, thank you very much for coming to address us. Thank you very much for coming to address us all. You know, I think as a student assembly, I think we're very understanding of the fact that, you know, budget cuts have to be made at this time. We went through a process where we discussed the Swedish and Dutch program being cut. Our entire byline funding process, for the most part, you know, when we increased groups funding, it was because of reduced administrative support over the last 2 years. So, you know, we certainly understand the necessity of certain budget cuts to be made. But I think what the discussion today has sort of centered around are two principles. The first is a notion of shared sacrificing, during this whole process of budget cuts. I think a lot of people talk about how crippling, the range would be, and a lot of people are calling for more evenly distributed shared sacrificing, this economic climate. And I think the second is this idea of shared governance. That the university really prides itself upon. And I think it's, as VP Andrews and Admin Nicoletti touched on, I think it's absolutely critical, you know, especially because there's so much uncertainty moving forward, I think it's absolutely critical for you to, continue to engage not only with the student assembly, but also with members of the audience. Moving forward to, you know, when you start evaluating the different budgets that you propose, that are proposed to you, when you actually make the decisions, I think it's absolutely critical to engage with students about this. So I think those two principles of shared sacrifice and shared governance are the two to keep in mind moving forward.
I mean, just to make a comment. First of all, in terms of involving students, talking to students, you will notice that I jumped at the opportunity to come talk here.
Yep.
I really appreciate this opportunity. And indeed, you folks have a particular responsibility in something like this, because you are in fact representatives of the collective student body. In fact, it gives you a unique role, which is why it's so important to administrators like us. And if I can have a discussion with the student leadership, people who are connected in a kind of systematic way and have been granted by their fellow students some authority to speak on behalf of the students. So it really, as I said before, any meeting will come in a moment to talk to you folks, so you should have exercised that right. But this is part of my process of exploring this with the student body.
we will certainly explore it further going forward. We will explore it further going forward if it to happen. On the question of whether the cuts are fair or not, I do want to draw your attention to part of the discussion that's been going on at Cornell. One of the problems last year, when the cuts hit us, they hit us really quickly. We had, you know, maybe a month and a half to figure out how to absorb a $9 million cut, when 3-4 months earlier than that, we would have been expecting $3-4 million increase. You know, it's a normal increase in our budget in these things. So this is a very, very big thing. And one of the things that really bothered me was how opportunistic the cutting was. We were anything that came up, we grabbed it. You know, we lost 25 faculty, 25 professors last year, 5% of the faculty. These are people who retired, or actually graduated by some university, most people retired. But I erased those positions. They are no longer there. The arts college is now 5% smaller. 5% fewer professors, and 5% fewer courses, 5% increase in the student faculty ratio in the arts college. It's not a good thing. But the cuts that came were all over the place, and we had to take them where they came, and I felt terrible about it because when you cut, you really do not want to cut uniformly. That's a recipe for really mediocre outcomes. What you have to ask is questions like, who has been overly privileged in the past? We can't afford overly privileged them anymore. Are there things that we do that we should continue to do because they're not part of our core mission? That kind of focusing and rethinking is absolutely important. So the provost, Provost Fox, has been very emphatic about the need to come to teach that in terms of cutting. And that means it's not fair. It means things are not uniform. And it really is important to do that, in my opinion, or else you really get an extremely mediocre outcome. And so I push back a little bit on the notion of fairness. Things you should be forcing, you should be requiring them to ask themselves hard questions. And you are. We're asking you, what does this do in regards to this one? That's a hard question. I'm trying to put it off so I have a better idea of what it will do. But get me back in 3 or 4 months. And when we have some more to talk about, I'll be happy to discuss it.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our discussion, and we do have more speakers, but I encourage them, you know, to email you privately in order to get an answer from you. And I guess before you go, I was wondering, for interested students who would like to get involved with this budget proposal committee, you said that would be convening in several months. How would they go about doing that if they wanted to get involved?
They want to get involved, and the best thing is to stay in contact with the department. I'm not organizing interviews with the departments, the chair of the department, or the faculty of the arts. They are the key people, and you can figure out who
that is. Okay. Yeah, thank you again for willing to sit with us.
The website address is finished.com.
Actually, if you want to get involved, work with the department.
Yeah. Okay.
That's perfectly fine.
And they'll be sure to do that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We have an elections committee update by VP June.
Sorry, I'll try to be a little bit more eloquent than I was earlier. So as many of you, I'm sure, know, elections are coming up. Basically, if you want to run, which I hope many of you do, you have to get all your materials and forms into 109 Day Hall by Monday the 15th at noon. There's actually no more packets anymore. We're doing everything online. So if you would like to use forms and put them out and fill them out, you can go to our website, assembly.cornell.edu.
Uh, And other announcements, President Scorton has replied to us about several resolutions that we passed last semester, and one of them was the community clause that he gave the green light to, so we hope to implement that. We would have done it this meeting, but unfortunately there are no censored body resolutions, so hopefully in future meetings, Parliamentarian Cohen would be giving out the red voting placards to audience members to be able to vote on that. We have an Appropriations Committee update by DTV.
Yeah, everyone, we're going to be meeting this Sunday at noon in Goldwin Smith 160, is that right? Yeah, 160. To talk about appendix B changes. We should be there for probably about 1 to 2 hours, depending on how long it takes. No set time, but you know, we'll go through the document together and sort of fix the details and solicit feedback. Matt Danzer has contacted me, via non-appropriation committee members who's coming. If anyone else wants to come, please let me know sooner rather than later. Thanks.
Jamek, update by Lucy Kumar.
So I'm meeting with Darren Jones, who acted basically as co-chair last semester. So I'm meeting with him by the end of the week, and we're hoping to get the committee back rolling within the next week or so. So if you're interested, please let me know. I believe the LGBTQ rep, the two minority reps, and the international rep are automatically members of the committee, but if others want to get involved in multicultural issues, let me know soon. Thanks.
Red Life update by Rep. Dan Brown.
I'll try to keep this short in the interest of time. A few of us have a team of files. Sorry, I'm going to be fumble on Friday. We're going to be meeting with Travis Apgar and the teacher to you. I'll be meeting next time. I've got more information.
Any questions? Okay. Dining update by BC Latell.
All right, real fast, I just wanted to tell you guys about a couple interesting events that are coming up in the next few weeks. If you saw when we came into the Willow Street Memorial Room today, there's a big line that's for the Chinese New Year in Oakenshield. So if you guys are hungry afterwards, I suggest going down there. Hopefully we'll get some food left. Next Tuesday in Robert Purcell is going to be the Mardi Gras Feast. A local Cajun band is going to be here, so definitely encourage you guys to go. It's a lot of fun. My favorite event all year. Also, we're doing a whole bunch of dining specials for Black History Month. There's quite a few advertisements and stuff in the Cornell Daily Sun as well as throughout throughout campus. So look out for those. They're being featured in different dining halls as well. And then with the commencement of the Olympics, you guys are going to see a lot of specialty foods being offered. So look out for those. Canadian food, yeah. I don't know what that means.
I can't wait to find out.
I don't know if this has ever been addressed, but I just have a question. Why are there caps on the
What is
the number of guest passes that you're allowed to
have? That's something I can bring up at our meeting, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'll talk to you after.
Most schools say that if you have one thing, you'll be able to only explain it. You're going to explain it. You're going to explain it. You're going to explain it.
I think part of the reasoning for that is because you choose if you want 14 meals a week or 10 meals a week or how many meals a week you want. So it's all kind of built into the price. But we'll talk about it later.
We have a UA update from Representative Rockman.
Okay, so the University Assembly yesterday passed a resolution that's going to be sent to the President shortly. I don't know if you read the Sun today, but the resolution was an anti-discrimination clause that protects the same class of people as you'll see in this resolution today, and it protects them from harassment that's severe or pervasive enough to unreasonably affect their educational experience. So that, I thought, was a giant leap forward, and hopefully we'll be able to finish with this non-discrimination stuff with this resolution today.
Okay, before we move on to unfinished business, I'd like to officially swear in our new transfer rep, Christian Moreno. So if you can please rise and lift your right hand and repeat after me. Hopefully this won't be a weekly occurrence. In view of the trust the Cornell community has vested in me. In view of the trust the Cornell community has vested in me. As well as my personal sense of honor.
As well as my personal sense of honor.
I, state your name.
I, Christopher Adam.
Do solemnly affirm to fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative. To fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative. I will engage in open and honest debate in a process where I am guided by truth and fairness. I will never purposefully misrepresent facts in an effort to achieve my goals. If a conflict of interest arises, I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision-making process. I will seek out and voice effectively the interests and concerns of the student body. Address the issues of my fellow students and strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students. All right, join me in welcoming Christian Moran. Now we have resolution 44, the non-discrimination 405. Representative Boston. Gabe Phillips.
Just point of information, so each of these amendments has to be voted on by all of us, I believe.
I can't change the resolution by finding amendments friendly.
No.
No. Making this again?
This will be at the end of that sentence. So when it says wait when determined.
Okay.
And the other change is, you know, now it says notwithstanding the requirements of subordinate redemption based on gender, comma, wait, comma, and type. That's it. So I can only click.
Motion for a hand vote.
Sure. So we're going to do these separately? All right. We'll do them all at once. So is everyone clear on the amendments that were made, first of all? If you're not, please ask. Okay. Yeah, sure. Go ahead and repeat your amendment.
Okay. So, yeah.
Okay, there was a motion to vote and there was a second. Is there any dissent? And there was a motion for a hand vote and a second for that. Okay, so if there's no dissent, all in favor of passing this, including this amendment in this resolution, please raise your hand. Have 19. All right, all those against and abstaining. Okay, so by a vote of 19-0, the amendment's passed. Now we can resume discussion. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to get on the speaker's list, please raise your hand and you'll be recognized.
Okay, so this is a much different resolution than you saw. And the reason is because it's less important than the form, what we were going for really was to avoid now, we are going after all organizations. We are covering all organizations. So, if you appoint your leadership and you discriminate on the basis of sex, violence, race, all those different classes that are covered, then you will be in violation of this contract. In other words, if there was a repeat of high office controversy, there would be a violation of this contract. This is big, this is a statement, this is pushing the limits about what is legally permissible. And so, I'm going to pass it over to
Captain Holmes and I'll be with you. It's just a little awkward because I came to present comments about last week's proposed wording and this is the first I've seen this wording. So, I'm going to try to make my way through this statement and I'll have to see how I want to adjust some comments as I go. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to consider this resolution. The contract for independent organizations for legal documents has been used at Cornell for approximately 15 years. And it has undergone some minor revisions over the years. Probably the biggest revision was taking a look at that annuity clause that exists in the IO and expanding it to better reflect current practice about 5 to 7 years ago. Now, last spring, because of the complaint lodged against IELTS, we discovered that the non-discrimination clause contained wording that addressed membership, not leadership. And I think we're trying to keep them down to address that concern. So I think we're trying to improve the wording, and I think it's going to improve our opinion to take a look at this clause and make sure the non-discrimination, the wording that we're taking now, reflects the non-discrimination of the policy. You may be aware that staff in my office did a changing of the IO that some of you were discussing. Now, I'd like to say that we're in a new document for better because the person is thinking that we're going to go with it, but I'm not so sure. And I thought that the intention was to prevent discrimination against people in our community and still protect constitutional rights such as religious expression. And I hope that that can be done. So does this resolution do that? You know, I'm not a lawyer. And I'm glad to listen to your comments and participate in a dialogue about the situation that as a member of the LGBTQ community, I actually don't find black and white. I think it's very complex. Our investigation in this matter indicates that IELTS are usually going to be illegal, in which they violate the permission clause of the IELTS. As we proceed, we use my wording that will support the right of all people's worship as they exist. Here's the part that we can try to change the wording in the IO, but we may find out that in certain circumstances, discrimination is important. So can we adopt the new wording, and can we make all parties happy? We don't know yet. But I commend you for trying to challenge the status quo. And I commend you for trying to engage in dialogue about this. If you don't try to change the wording, it won't change. And if you do try, we may actually find wording that will allow us to embrace open parts of your business and do it.
Thank you for coming, Ms. Holmes, and thank you for your patience in waiting to present this resolution. We'll move on to the speakers list. First, we have Representative Bandia.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. with the passage of that amendment, I'm extremely happy for my report behind this resolution. To address some of the concerns you've called, what that amendment did was essentially, and I'm going to be the one to relevant, it would prevent groups like Chi Alpha from ever doing what they did last year ever again. It would prevent student organizations that believe that something is wrong or moral from preventing people like that from becoming leaders in their organization or from removing them from leadership positions once they're there. Now, the way that this is done is not to say that organizations like Pi Alpha can't believe what they want. It's not saying that they can't, on their own, hold organizations that reflect their wishes. But if they wish to receive money that is from the student body, receive money from this body and have us appropriate money to them that was given to us in trust with the general student body at Cornell, we need to know that there are certain standards they cannot break. One of those is non-discrimination. So what the previous version of this resolution did not do. The previous version of this resolution basically would have said that Chi Alpha, what you did was wrong, but you can do it again and you're not going to die. The current version of this resolution, which was, and I apologize for the late answer, because we worked on this literally right before this meeting. And I didn't mean to surprise you with it, but this new wording would absolutely prevent any such group, whether it be Chi Alpha or any other organization, from doing any, from discriminating against their members for voting, for seeking office, for holding office, regardless of whether they be elected to that office, appointed to that office, or anything in between. So I urge passage of this resolution so that we can make Cornell a safer place and a better place for all.
Representative Smith.
Okay, so, of course, I'm always, you know, the moderator here. My issue, after listening to Jay and the Reverend Lasky and also talking to you, and with the decisions that you made, I still think this is a difficult resolution. I'm borderline supporting it. But the thing is, it's always difficult when you mix feelings and the law and the religion together. So you're always going to run into some sort of conflict of interest. My issue, my thing is, I do believe what Chi Alpha did is wrong. At the same time, you have to wonder if you don't agree with that certain, whatever that ideology is, especially when you're talking about religion, then you kind of wonder why you're schooling. You know, so sometimes it's just like, we need to have a response to the student assembly to protect people from things like this. We do. The university also has a responsibility to protect students, faculty, staff, everybody has a responsibility. And people, individuals, also have a responsibility to themselves. You know, you kind of have to make decisions. You have to weigh up, weigh your options, weigh your preferences, weigh your decisions at the same time. You're not, I asked her question that she said, and she stated the same thing. We don't know if we're going to cover every situation. We can try. And I think this resolution is actually making a great effort to try. And we're not going to cover everything. We have responsibility to at least make an effort. And it's not always about money. So I know that the basis of this is if they're getting money from FSC, correct? If they're getting SASC funding, then they cannot be given those. So essentially, they can still say, fine, we don't want it unless they receive money. Because we're going to do our values, using our ideology. So it's hard to say if it's actually protecting people. It's only protecting people if that organization wants to keep getting money from their ability.
Okay, we'll give you 30 seconds.
Well, what would happen if this was in play, it's not an SSC document, it's an independent organization document. So if this is in play and they violate it, they're no longer going to be an independent student organization.
Right. Okay. Mike Blackwell. Yep. Yeah. You're competing with the chimes, so if you can speak into a mic. No, we'll move on. Representative Min.
So, obviously, I'm in favor of all the people saying that this resolution. I'm just a little confused as to the president of the foundation, which is
go ahead.
so.
I know this might not be the best analogy, but are we basically supporting that a member of the tennis club shouldn't really enjoy the content? But somehow we thought that as well. It would not be, I guess, on a legal basis, correct for the executive body to bring the instruction.
Well, no, because skill or interest has not been affected by the law. If they said you can't be voting or holding leadership position because you're black, that's gay, or you're different. It's not, it's not skill, level, skill, or interest, or anything like that.
All right, VP Basil.
Yes, I mean, I just kind of want to echo a little bit of what, you know, you guys have said, which is the fact that all these changes are great improvements, but really, at the end of the day, it still doesn't satisfy that question of whether, you know, religion supersedes gender or sexual orientation in this debate over, you know, groups' officer positions, whether a group, you know, following religious doctrine can, you know, make these sort of judgments about their membership and their leadership. I don't think this really does much of anything to sort of, you know, solve that debate, because really both are protected, or at least both should be protected, you know, belief systems. So, nevertheless, I do still support this resolution, you know, with hesitation. I do want to give us more opportunity to talk it over next week, and we have to do SCFC today, so I'm going to go ahead and motion to postpone it to next week.
Second.
Motion to table next week.
We're going to vote on it because there was a second.
I mean,
going
the second table. If
yeah. So.
Point of information: there's a motion on the table.
Yeah, there's a motion, so we're just going to vote. Is there any dissent?
There
is dissent. So all in favor to tabling it to next week, please raise your hand. And we need 2/3, I believe. Seven. All those against? Three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Okay, so. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and table it because we need to get. It was 7-8.
So, okay.
Yeah, the vote was against tabling it, but I'm going to table it as a chair to next week because we need to get through the SAFC talk. All right, next up is Resolution 45, the SAFC Appeals Process Reform. Charlie Fang, Van Goose, and BGB.
Thank you.
Is this identical to the resolution from?
Yes.
Okay. So first off, is just this side.
A little bit about this, and in a separate resolution, I would like to propose
They need to let you can apply for a special project. You can do this under the deadline, so that's something I'd like to discuss at a later time. As far as what you guys have in here specifically, I'm definitely for the process you guys have of streamlining the appeals process. I think it's definitely something that would make your guys' life a lot easier. My only concern is how you guys have, if the appeal were to go through the student assembly, I think you guys brought up having the proposition of having the student assembly cover the cost for the changing the appeal. I just want to know where you guys stand on that right now personally. Just based on the fact that you guys have $85 per student, we have $5 per student, and just how the appeal process worked in the past, and I'm personally a proponent of if we do consider that appeal and change the notion of bounding that back to the SAT to cover that cost. So I just want to know how you guys talked about that and where you guys put on the table.
Sure. I think that my strength and Addison's amendment is to totally sometimes to take the head rather than that.
Yeah, so I motion to amend the resolution to strike the clause under the decision headline. If the Community Information Commission did not err, but still believe the organization should receive funding for activities not covered by the commission, the committee may recommend an appropriation from administrative budget of the assembly. So that's my first motion. And then in the second motion, I discussed this with Ari, the co-chairs. I emailed you in this. It's not 100% necessary, but I also put on the clause, I guess, immediately following that, so that it currently reads, for each determination that the commission erred, the commission or executive committee must, within 10 business days, and then it gives the two bullet points. I want to add, if the commission does not meet the timetable, the amount requested within the appeal will automatically be granted. Is that fine?
Well, we need to vote on it.
If you'd like me to remove that last part, I could, but it's something. What?
Well, we still need to vote on it.
Yeah, I know, we still need to vote on it. But do you have any response to the last one? I can remove that last one if you want.
Just to make sure that... Can you remove that?
You know what? For simplicity's sake, I'm just going to remove that last part. So my only amendment, I motion to amend by removing that paragraph, by leaving that paragraph.
So there's been a motion to amend the clause in the third page of the resolution on the bottom, which starts with if the committee determines and ends with the administrative budget of the assembly. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is granted and that clause is stricken.
That's okay.
Sure.
All right, so now that clause has been removed, Neil and I, along with the commission and Ari, we've discussed the entire resolution, of course, without that paragraph, and it does create a streamlined process. There is something to be said about the application process. And the reason why I'm going to support the resolution as is now is because we're going to be working throughout the semester in conjunction with the co-chairs and with Ari to try and find a happy medium, because the current appeal process that we used last semester was, I think, a stopgap measure that isn't effective and doesn't do justice to the SAFC. And we'll be working hopefully in the next few weeks. We can present something and definitely by next semester something will be in position. So I call the question on this resolution.
Okay, there's been a called question in a second. Is there any defense? All right, seeing none, can we take a hand vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Counted 14. All those against? Oh. What was the count? I counted 14. Oh, Kristen Fossey?
Oh, yeah. Which one goes on the right side?
45.
No, she didn't talk to you. Yes,
oh,
she can't.
Okay, so everyone raise your hands again so we have an exact count.
Wait, we just had something to do.
Now we have 15. Yeah. All those against? Any abstentions? All right. So by a vote of 15-0-1, the resolution passed.
It'll be 15.
Yeah.
No, let's push through. Yeah, Resolution 47, establishment of the Student Assembly Public Service Committee.
Why would it be so long?
I mean,
just making
the changes.
Oh, I see.
Sorry. Good luck with the hearing.
So,
you
can
do the testing.
Yeah, I'm going to move it. I'm sorry, I'm
going to do the testing. So, I'm sorry, I'm going to do the
yeah, I'll take responsibility for that.
But also, with me today, obviously,
yeah.
Information
Can you just repeat your second "be it therefore resolved" clause?
Sure.
Yeah, the meeting's officially over, but I'm going to go ahead and extend it by 10 minutes. Okay. So the first one was creating advertising campaigns, and the second one was?
And the second was coordinating campus-wide student fundraising and organization efforts between
student clubs. Okay. All right, great. Do you have anything else, or can we move the speaker?
What?
Can we move to the speaker? Oh, sure. Go ahead. Quickly.
Yeah, just very briefly, why I'm here. I actually sat down with Lena, our director of the school, for a little bit last semester to discuss how the IFA in particular has worked with the Motion Service Center. Obviously, every applicant has went through care. It's a major resource of the preserving the code on our campus. And something very important is that the Motion Service Center is a major discussion of the government.
CPG. Zero.
I think all the changes you made were great. I think this is a fantastic committee, and I would like to call a question.
That's that. Yeah.
Okay. So there's been a motion to call to question. There's been a second, but there was dissent. So we're going to now vote to vote.
Can we get the reason for dissent?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about those.
He wants to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. So all those in favor of voting for the resolution, please raise your hand.
Voting on it.
Voting to vote. Yeah.
Four.
Yeah.
Voting on. Voting on.
All right, all those against? You can vote too, Adam, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Five.
Okay, so were you...
Yeah.
Okay, so 9-5, so we're going to go ahead and vote.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I broke it. I pushed it through, yeah. So, will the clerk please call the roll? I mean, call the question. You can say it.
Yes. No.
Yay.
He left.
Yes. Gitlin?
Yes.
Slashes?
Yes.
Kumar?
Yes.
Latella?
Yes.
May?
No.
Nicoletti?
Yes.
Yes.
He left.
Gabriel?
He's on excuse.
Smith?
Yes.
Well?
No, she left.
Yeah.
By a vote of 15-0, the resolution passed. And we're going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Do you think taking official tests would be that?
No, we're not doing that. Yeah, because we're going to keep the cost down. Instead of like the $3,500, I'm going to try to save like $1,500. And so Chris and I are going to work out a way that we can split the mileage between SAFC funding and federal rates somewhere in between, like we did with the other company.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.